You are listening to the Jacob Sessions Podcast. We wrestle with God and one another.
So I showed up to the spot and he asked me, he said, "Where's your backpack?" And this is what I told him.
East side of my city. Right around my windows up, my deuces down in them speakers on, they been loud, turn them up. Maybe bumping that RMG, maybe playing that high sock. I love them boys, but I can't forget, salute the queen, Susie Rock. South side of my city, baby catch me on old Nat. Believe me, boy, it ain't nothing pretty. I love it though, cause I'm from that. Box Chevys, go grills, Clayton County where I'm from. Stay tinted down, that music loud, them mirror shakes, so we own one. East side of my city. West side of my city, south side of my city, boy, I'm all over my city. East side of my city, west side of my city, south side of my city, I'm all over my city.
I'm everywhere,
everywhere,
I'm everywhere,
boy, I'm all over my city.
Middle of the map, St. Louis.
Everybody, welcome to another episode of the Jacob Sessions Vodcast. I am your co-host, Calvin Moore. Rachel was having some technical difficulties. She was here a moment ago, and then she just texted me. She dropped off the call off the line and just texted me and let me know, hey, the internet went down on her college campus, and so she has no ability to be on this call right now. So unfortunately, as much as we would love to have Rachel's input on tonight's discussion, she is not here. However, we do have David Sidebotham and Scott Ramsey here with us. What's up, guys?
Calvin, I'm so happy. I just figured out for the first time why you're saying co-host when there's four of us instead of saying it four times. I rock at math today.
Yeah,
so
good.
Proud of myself.
Good. That, I'm glad. See, who says that math is not useful after high school?
I mean, it's great for not embarrassing yourself online.
It absolutely is. Although your admission after, so this is our seventh episode now. Your admission at this, is it seventh or eighth?
I don't know. I mean.
We're at seven. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, seven's a good number. That's my reality now. Don't challenge it.
Yeah, okay. So after seven episodes, though, the fact that it took you seven episodes, that means that it took you 7 weeks to figure that out.
I mean, I kept the thing. He's like, "Oh, that doesn't seem like there's four people. Why is he seeing it? Oh, we're going into the thing. Okay."
Gotcha. All right. So, so sorry that Rachel could not be here. If you're listening to the podcast and you were hoping to hear her amazing voice, she's not here today. And so we're going to have David have more of a high-pitched voice today, just for people who tuned in just to hear Rachel. We're going to have David.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not quite that high pitched, but I'm higher pitched than.
I would try to have Scott do it, but I just don't think he can pull it off.
Yeah,
so I could just talk like this the rest of the time. I'm sure people would take me seriously.
That's so funny. So, in my world, just I want to let you guys know some of the things that I'm reading and some of the things that I'm listening to. Actually, I didn't pay attention too much to what's coming out next week in terms of music, unfortunately, and I want to start rolling that in here. But I do know that as of this recording, Alex Faith's new album, At Last, has come out, and that was some of the music you heard coming into this episode. Actually, I'm just figuring that out as I'm saying this, so if you're just tuning in, you heard the music that you're wondering, hey, who was that? That was Alex Faith. I just decided that just now. So I don't even know what track it'll be. I don't even know what track it'll be. Probably the one about the city. I believe it's called Everywhere. But anyway, so Alex Faith picked that up. Lecrae has a new album coming out in a couple days. Church Clothes. Actually, I believe the non-DJ version is available today on iTunes. But the DJ Don Cannon version is not available for a couple more days. That's coming out on November 7th. So, and that's kind of the big deal one where he's kind of co-signed by a mainstream DJ and all that stuff as he pushes from the Christian hip-hop world into the mainstream hip-hop world. So those are a couple albums that are on the horizon or have just come out. In terms of books I'm reading, I am currently reading two books. The Spiritual Danger of Doing Good by Peter Greer. I think that's too much light. Okay, I'm going to try to do it so there's not. Okay, anyway, Spiritual Danger of Doing Good. Great book. a lot of us get out there and we try to do good in the world, and we don't realize some of the things that that might do to our faith if we're in it for the wrong reasons. And so it's a really good read, especially for someone like me, who I often feel guilty. Like there'll be Missionary Sunday or something, and somebody will come in with their missionary kids who are all dressed exactly the same. So you're not sure if they're missionaries or homeschooled kids, but anyway, they're all kind of dressed the same, and you feel guilty that you don't live in, like, you know, Cambodia or something serving Jesus. And so this kind of takes to task the idea of getting into any spiritually good thing for the wrong reasons, and also not getting rest and things like that. So really, really good book. But I'm going to be honest, I've been spending a lot more of my time reading this thing, which, for those of you who don't know,
it's the Holy Bible.
No, it is not. That is the
Dang it.
That is the Assassin's Creed logo. It is a video game. This is the Collector's Edition walkthrough guide with all these pictures, and yeah, it gives me everything I need to know to get through this game. I'm a history major, so anything that has to do with history, I love. And this game kind of takes place back in time, each game. And this one, I'm a pirate sailing the high seas. I get to hang out with Blackbeard and all these other famous pirates, which is kind of cool. So enjoying that. As a matter of fact, the game is on pause. So when we're done with this podcast, that's what I'm going to be doing. I'd like to pretend that I'm going to be sitting down, reading my Bible, you know, centering my, you know, my heart, and, you know, contemplating, you know, how good God is to me. But I'm going to be killing people and plundering their ships for rum and cloth and metal and stuff like that. So anyway, that's what's going on my radar. Also, wanted to inject some podcasts. We are podcasters. We love to podcast here. Obviously, you're listening to us, but. We also listen to other podcasts, or at least I listen to other podcasts. I listen to a couple. The first one I listen to is the Relevant podcast, which is connected to the relevantmagazine.com and Relevant Magazine, the printed magazine, also on your iPad. You can read it. So really good podcast, really great content. As a matter of fact, I kind of aspire for this to be a bit like that. And then also another podcast for kind of young 20-somethings, single, dating, young married, young professional, called the Boundless Show, which is part of the Boundless blog from Focus on the Family. And I'm not normally all into all the Focus on the Family stuff that comes out. I don't agree with everything they say, but I'm a big fan of this particular program, especially the host, Lisa Anderson. And I would love to get her here on our podcast at some point. And she knows that. We're friends on Facebook. I keep hounding her. Maybe it'll happen one day. But definitely two podcasts to check out if you're looking for podcasts to listen to. They're not too heady, and they're just a lot of fun to listen to. Great drive time audio in addition to the Jacob Sessions. Jacob Sessions comes first. Remember that. But, you know, there's other stuff you can listen to as well. So how about you guys?
I mean, I don't have nearly as much going on in my life just in terms of media. I don't have time for that much media. But you'd be proud of me. I am watching a real TV show.
Oh, what is it?
Yeah, it is Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23.
Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23. Okay, all right.
Yeah, no, I feel like compared to my normal affair of things, there's things like Ender's Game, Attack on Titan, and Game of Thrones. My girlfriend and I got missing out trying to figure out what is something which I can watch, which she also wants to watch. And okay. I was hanging out Sunday, and I'm like, this show is hilarious, mostly because it reminds me of all my friends in college. so, bit of nostalgia there. It's about a girl from Indiana, conservative background, moves to crazy liberal town in New York, and not in terms of like Christian or not Christian, but in terms of how she deals with that culture shock and being scammed by her roommate, which is pretty cool. So, yes, that happened.
Fair enough. How about you, Scott? What's going on?
Well, I am in the middle of production on my documentary, which means the only thing I am doing is my documentary and this podcast.
Okay.
So for the next few weeks, that it will be all consuming.
Okay. Now, how long? You said the next few weeks. So when I think about a documentary, I just assume that takes, you know, months and weeks and years and Kickstarter campaigns and all that stuff. So are you on the tail end of it, or are you just beginning it? How does this work?
At the beginning, I'll spend all day tomorrow shooting for it. And, you know, we're in that interview, research, just collecting lots and lots of stuff stage. So currently that, you know, uses up all of my brain cells. In a few weeks, though, enough of that will be done that I'll have some time to actually think about something else.
Okay. All right.
Nice.
All right. Well, tonight on the for our roundtable segment, I really lament that Rachel is not able to be with us now. But
hey, pretty awesome topic.
Yeah,
I think anyway.
We'll get some. You know, it's really interesting because she's at a really conservative college, so I would have loved to have had her perspective. But on this topic. But tonight's topic is going to be led by David, and I'm actually pretty excited about this topic. So I don't want to ruin it. So I'll let you kind of take it from here, David, and then when everything's kind of, you know, winding down, I'll close things out. But you go ahead and take over.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure you guys have kind of gotten the impression from hearing me talk. I'm into the question is about movies and how we engage with movies and media. And in the last podcast, it came up that some of the media I engage with is controversial. Pyramid Head, Game of Thrones.
No, that wasn't about media you engage in. That was like you wanting to dress up and scare everyone. I can be very clear on that, okay?
It's like I said, if you don't know what you are, you just tip your head sideways and start clicking ominously while slowly moving toward them.
Yeah, but nobody said anything about, you know, oh, R-rated films, or the fact that you watch Silent Hill, you're evil, you're immoral.
R-rated content is the point.
R-rated content, whatever. You know, the games are rated M, the movies are rated R, whatever. The content is assumed to be R-rated, right?
And the Comic-Con can likewise be rated.
Okay. Yes, it can.
It's not a place for children.
It can be. Pokemon looked very different when I was a kid. Let's just be honest.
Yeah.
Let's just be honest.
Yeah.
At any event,
go on.
The basic question is I feel like with a lot of what when we ask ourselves as Christians we ought to be engaging with is framed from the perspective of what shouldn't we do? And so I wanted to ask the question, what in reference to engaging with R-rated content ought we do? Like, just it's a very generic, when kind of thinking about engaging with this content, what are the questions we ask ourselves and what do we value in that leads us to it?
Okay. I guess I can give kind of a brief answer. For me, it's a very nebulous thing, especially, you know, what constitutes R-rated content? You know, what makes it R-rated here and not R-rated there, even though it's kind of the same content, which is a fascinating discussion in and of itself, which I'll refer to later on in this documentary that I've seen that talks about that. But for me, I think it really... how I engage it has a lot to do with the themes of the film itself. What questions are being asked of this film? Because there's plenty of R-rated content in films that are attached to films that aren't asking me any questions, that aren't making me contemplate what it means to be human. For instance, I just watched This Is the End with Seth Rogen and James Franco and Jay Baruchel and Craig Robinson, and it's just lots of R-rated content that completely was without value given the context of the film. I mean, yeah, I laughed at some things I probably shouldn't have laughed at because it is pretty funny, but...
I felt that way about Boondock Saints.
Oh, yeah, but it just, the context made it less valuable to me, all of the content. However, the R-rated content was less valued because of the context. However, a film like 12 Years a Slave, which I just went and saw, has a lot of R-rated content. Especially there's rape, there is, you know, the beating of slaves in the film, there is the hanging of black slaves as well. So there's just this jarring content that couldn't get anything other than an R rating in terms of content. And so But that I find value in because of the story it was telling, the things that it's making me remember, the things that it's demanding that I keep from ever happening again within myself and within my community. So I, in a roundabout way of answering that question, I think it really does depend on the context. The content can be the same in two different places, but depending on the questions being asked, the context of the story determines whether I find value in the content itself.
Yeah, I think it's a challenge for us because when we engage this sort of question, we have a tendency to do it from this very moralistic perspective, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think it's natural as Christians to be very interested in the question of what sort of things would displease God, what sort of things we need to keep out and avoid. Yeah. But the idea of considering what we should engage with, what we should pursue, what sort of things, you know, we ought to sort of bring into our lives, into our hearts and heads, I think that's a really important thing for all of us to be thinking of. And it seems that for most people I know, I don't think there's a lot of questioning of that. You know, I mean, it seems that for this sort of media and stuff, we have a tendency to just consume it without really pausing to consider if it's something that we should consume or not. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, my experience has been nearly identical. In a lot of ways, I find, I can't think of many examples off the top of my head because I avoid them like the plague, but a movie which, say, just a good PG movie, which at the same time, it's absolutely brainless and in my perception has very little value. I'm not saying it's objectively wrong, but it impacts me in a way that I feel more offended by that than I will by an episode of Mad Men. And I can't watch Mad Men because it's too emotionally traumatic for me. But I'll get more offended by trivializing life than I will by that. And I think that trivialization is enabled by this not really thinking about what's right for me to watch, but... And when people say what is edifying, they really mean, I find a lot of times they're harking back to that whatever is good, whatever is pure, do these things kind of thing. So really talking what edifies God. But what edifies God is caretaking yourself. And the question is, what edifies me? What edifies you is going to be very, very, very gray. So I guess my thing, it's – I like to consider myself a storyteller. I have for a very long time. This question became paramount to me when discussion with someone, and they were quite angry that I had been watching Game of Thrones, and that I played. I'm going to say this online, but for a while I was playing D&D over the week with my little brother because he's. I know, evil, right? It was the only way to have almost like what we're having here, sort of an IRL relationship.
You got them. You know what's funny is like I moved from just calling you evil for that, because you know I really could care less, to just calling you a nerd, which is like way down here.
Yeah, like actually worse. I'd rather just be evil at this point.
Right.
Yeah,
let's face
it. On my college campus, it was always like the same guys that would have a D&D night, and they were always like the socially awkward guys. I'm like, you should come and play. Yeah. And I was like, nah, I got some credibility to maintain, and that is
is what I said to my little brother every time he invited me for like 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized
then got you.
Well, he's in Boston. What am I going to do, right? It's like that or not hang out with him. So, but no, really, he made it an awesome time. I'm going to say I didn't regret that decision at all. If he asked me again and I had time, I'd do it in a heartbeat. Okay. It was just a great time with him. But the point of it is they challenged me with this whole, A, Game of Thrones has got pornographic material in it, and B, what you're doing is just escapistic and that's all there is to it. And that was the end of the conversation for me. I was just like, you know what? If it's that simple, there's no sense arguing with this. And I realized what was driving me, and I had this really deep emotional reaction, to feel like, in spite of the bad content, I needed to engage with the Game of Thrones, was a sense that right or wrong, good or bad, themes being good or themes being evil, there are some stories which are so well told, some art which is so well done. If you're a creative person, to hide from that, because you fear being emotionally damaged by the content, would it hinder you? And then if you're called to serve God as to be an artist, then not doing that, I know for me, it would hinder me. So in a sense, like I said, Mad Men's so emotionally traumatic, I can't watch it. I know that because I tried. And I made him make through the whole thing, but there's that sense there, which I get. I guess I feel like I've rambled, so what do you guys
No, I find it interesting that people actually draw those strange lines. Like, I would take a show like or content in programming like Game of Thrones. I've tried to get into Game of Thrones. I think I'm like 6 episodes into the first season. I need to actually go back and just watch it all. But yeah, there's that striking imagery, and there's nudity, and there's violence, and it's not normally the violence that's being commented on. It's stuff like nudity, right?
Yeah.
But
in this case,
I don't think a lot of people are getting together and getting on Facebook and getting on Twitter and talking about their love for this show because they get to see a woman's breasts. I really think that the story being told is striking a chord with a lot of people, mm-hmm. and so. They're not coming to the show because, oh, there's nudity. Cause you can get nudity anytime you want on the internet at this point, for free, no problem. You can do whatever you want in that respect. But I think a lot of Christians want to draw the line and don't consider the content that is there. They'll watch a show like Lost. Like, I love Lost cause it was a very human story. It asked deep questions about science and faith. And it was always this kind of, this tension there, and there was really the same content relationally in a show like Lost that there is in the show Game of Thrones that I've seen so far, right?
Yeah.
And so obviously you can do more and you can push the envelope more because it's on HBO and all that jazz, but I think that people want to draw lines in the sand when you see a boob, even though the content could be exactly the same, and that devalues everything, which brings up this idea of living in a shame culture, which is a whole other conversation, a whole other podcast, probably about sex and shaming. But I find that very interesting and problematic at the same time.
So I hear all that, and I tend to agree. However, I think on the conservative side of things, and I'm not personally on the conservative side of things at all. Mm-hmm. However, I think one sort of intelligent response that I hear to those things is that there is not a shortage of media to consume here, mm-hmm. right? Like we have a lot of choices, but we do have a limited amount of time. And the idea that we should give our time to certain things because they tell a really compelling story, even though they include these other things that we find objectionable, is not necessarily a really rational thing to do. You know, I mean, if
then we send them off to read the Bible, which is
well,
but maybe it's not read the Bible. Maybe it is support some of those other things that tell good stories, but do it without some of the objectionable material, or without just being so explicit about it. You know, you can tell visually, you can tell an amazing part of a story without having to show it. Sometimes it's even more powerful to not show these things, to allow the person's imagination, you know, to sort of fill in the gaps there. That can be a mm-hmm. much more powerful thing than just throwing it up on the screen. And I think an argument can be made, you know, that says, hey,
I think an argument
the good stuff
can be made. I think that argument is oftentimes – that argument can be made. That argument should be made. That argument is oftentimes made as a straw man fallacy. And the reason why it's made as a straw man fallacy is if you take that argument and apply it to something like Lord of the Rings and you say, are you really engaged in this kind of – really so much good content. You really need to engage with this one. If we were just talking about World War II – I'd say, yeah, absolutely. There's more of those than there are ants in the ground. You don't need to watch one film.
That's
sex
not
if
true.
You...
That's not true.
Yeah, you're right. It's a hyperbole. I'm lying, guys. But yeah, whereas something like the Iliad, which is ridiculously graphic and grotesque, or something like Lord of the Rings, which follows in those footsteps, it's very brutal. And then if you seem like, I would put Game of Thrones in that category. People tell me there's no new story. I always disagree. I think in every 100 years, you have geniuses like Tesla. You have the story writing equivalents of those. These people tend to be fairly disturbed in some ways, because the world does that if you're an artist. And what comes out is usually, not always, but usually, especially in the case of Tolkien, very dark for his time. And now you've got Game of Thrones, and yes, the HBO version, I think, crosses a lot of lines I wouldn't cross as a storyteller. I don't think, just exhibiting by how many people, when I look back on the show, I hardly remember the content, to the point where I rewatched season one with a friend, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I forgot there was this much in there. I knew it was there, but I forgot there was this much. Mm-hmm. Because the rest of the story is so overshadowing of that content. I really don't think there's going to be another story like that for the next 100 years. And if Christians missed the bandwagon on that, it's okay. It's not wrong. People shouldn't just ubiquitously watch it because it's a good cultural thing, but they need to understand they are asking someone to miss a cultural mythological phenomenon. And that's not something to do lightly.
Now, I don't think that all things should be, I think there are certain films that everyone should watch. I think that everybody should, there's some that, while I think you should watch it because it's a cultural thing, and there's some that I think just as a human being, it's your duty to watch. Like, I think everybody should watch The Godfather. It's rated R. Watch part 2 as well. It's rated R. Don't watch part 3 because it's garbage, right? But that's a cultural thing. You don't have to watch those. But then there are films over here like Saving Private Ryan and Schindler's List and 12 Years a Slave that I'm like, you should watch those. Passion of the Christ, right up there. Actually, I had someone tell me that, they were like conservative Baptist, and I went down south and I was like, are you going to see this movie? Because it was like the R-rated movie that the Southern Baptist Convention lifted their ban on Disney so they could go see it. And it was rated R, but it was about Jesus, so it was okay. And I actually had one friend who was like super consistent on their no R-rated movie thing. And they were like, or R-rated content in films at all. Like, they would pause on commercials, on TV commercials, because they didn't want to be sold sex along with whatever product was being sold or whatever. And they're like, no, I'm not going to go see it because, you know, the Bible, what can tell the story better than the Bible? And I was like, oh, you probably should see the film. It's really good. But this brings me to this idea of, you know, the Bible, you know, again, you know, Scott, I say, you know, we tell people to go read the Bible, and there's a lot more content, you know, just talking to the conservative voice that you were speaking of, there's a lot more content in there that's objectionable, to the point that I would say if the Bible was turned into a movie, most Christians would boycott it. They would boycott it because of the content. And go ahead.
I was going to say, to a point as well, before I go too far down, I like where you're going with that. The Bible, for the most part, is not a story the same way the Iliad or Game of Thrones is a story. It's not told to be a coherent, enjoyable piece of entertainment media. It's history, prophecy, revelation, and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Sure, but then some of these films aren't meant to be entertaining. Just because it's film, we think, oh, film industry, entertainment. I remember when Saving Private Ryan came out, I worked at a movie theater when this happened, and you know, at the beginning of that film, the troops are storming the beaches of Normandy, right? And they're just getting mowed down by these Nazi people who are up high. And I remember this old man coming out of the theater, and we found out later on that he had stormed the beach of Normandy. He was one of the soldiers being portrayed in this movie, and he walks out of the theater and he goes, "I can't do this again. I can't do this again." And he collapsed on the ground. I was like, okay. And so, like, I think he had a heart attack, if I recall correctly. They resuscitated him. He was okay. But that story being told in that film wasn't about entertainment value. It wasn't about, hey, everybody, this is going to be a great film. And, you know, it's, you know, Passion of the Christ, not a popcorn film to go see. But it has content in it that should engage us. Schindler's List, same thing.
Yeah, I agree entirely with that.
So, I mean, that's kind of, just because it's a film, just because it's coming out in a medium that we normally go to for entertainment, like, you know, the Avengers and Batman and all those kinds of things, Man of Steel, we're generally entertained in that venue. But that doesn't mean that everything that comes out in that context is meant to be entertaining. Sometimes it's meant to be informative. Sometimes it's meant to pull our heartstrings. And sometimes it's meant to give us a place to remember. I mean, a lot of people aren't going to church anymore. We're told to remember the story, okay? Hey, remember this story, lest you forget. Remember what your soldiers sacrificed. Remember, you know, what, you know, African Americans went through in our history. Remember what happened to the Jews in the camps of Auschwitz and Buchenwald, these things. Remember. And so I think that in that case, we are, we should engage that material, whether it be through the film medium or whether it be through reading books. It's the same content, I think.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. Scott, if you don't have anything to add to that, I actually have heard what I think is it's a compelling objection to all of what we've been talking about, which I've had to struggle with a lot. If you guys...
Go ahead.
Scott.
Excellent. Good. Scott, I feel like he had the one objection. I'm kind of like, oh, that's just totally wrong. Shoot it down. And I'm
and I don't want the conversation to go to right and wrong and all that stuff.
I want to emphasize that that's not the point. It's certainly not that anyone should be big to recommend that person go watch a thing, to my mind. And thus, I don't go quite as far as you do on that one, Calvin, saying that there are some movies where everyone should watch it. I do say there are some movies where everyone would be improved if they watch it. But how they gain improvement before God is a decision up to them. And that's in large part because of this objection. Someone asked me once, and it was actually... It's actually one of my ex's dads. He had this weird thing, no R-rated content in movies unless it's historical. And then for some reason, lots and lots of toplessness is okay. And I'm like, I don't think that that's a bad movie. I'm not sure that's consistent. But he brought the challenge that as a creator of art or creating a society where people participate in art, you have to bear in mind the potential to cause damage to the audience in some way, whether it be introducing a kid who hasn't heard the F word before to the F word, or whether it be accidentally exposing a 13-year-old to sexual concepts before he even knows what sex is, or rather than because of my stuff, it's usually pretty dark and pretty violent. And a lot of people ask me, why are you writing it that way? And it's not written for a young audience. And there's always that risk, given that you can't ensure a young person doesn't get exposed to this. When you have, it's a societal push, not individual, it's a society, which is putting these arguments out there where they're easily accessible. When you creating this kind of dark art, it's not that the world isn't dark, it's that do we really need movies to tell us how dark it is, was the objection. Do you really need to endanger children for the sake of art?
Scott?
Well, I would say, do you have a Bible at home? You know?
That was more or less what I said. I said, really? Have you read Judges? I loved that book when I was six.
Yeah. Now, the truth is, you know, the objection that I threw out there a while ago was not really my objection.
Yeah, no, I get that.
And so often that was, you know, I encountered that a number of times, you know, as a pastor, where you would talk about something or bring something up or use some illustration or something that people found to be questionable or objectionable or something. And, you know, folks would get up in arms, you know, two or three of them. And, you know, and my response was, gosh, you know, I hope you haven't been reading the Old Testament lately, because... Yeah. That's going to really offend you, you know? Right, exactly. I'm like, you know, pick the thing that offends you here, and we can probably point to some version of that in Scripture. And, you know, those stories are not told safely and cleanly and all of that. And I think the notion of being thoughtful of children, being respectful of children and the ways in which we can do harm to children is very important. However, I don't think that is the job of artists or creators. I think that is the job of parents and other adults who are responsible for children.
Actually, as I told him, that is why we have the MPAA.
Yeah. Right? Actually, you know what? I watch a documentary. It's on Netflix, and I think everybody should watch this. You should watch this. No.
you must. It's, God
it's
says.
Called, so. It's called This Film Is Not Yet Rated, and it's about how the MPAA works. And it's really it's very interesting, but the rating system itself is very, very flawed. The way that it is instituted, the way that it is run, the way the group of people that are very secretive who are bringing down these ratings from rated G to NC-17. If you have NC-17 rating, your movie will not be played in any major movie theater chain. That's just the rules that they've come down with. And so a lot of directors are kind of furious when an NC-17 rating comes down, because that means they're going to make less money, even though they poured a lot of money into a movie and things like that. But one of the things I think we let the rating system do for us is raise our kids. You know, like, oh, R-rated movie. They've done all the determination I need for my kids. I don't need my kids to go see that. And when you have an R rating on a movie like Schindler's List and an R rating on a movie like This Is the End, you know, parents might look at those exactly the same thing, even though the content is wholly different and one is of value and one is really not. And so that I find very interesting, that parents allow, you know, the rating itself to do the parenting for us. Whereas the other day when I went to go see 12 Years a Slave, my mother is raising my niece, and she was like, oh, I want to bring Mariah to see that movie. And my mom made us kids watch all the movies about African-American people growing up. Like, we had to go watch Malcolm X. It was a 3-hour film when I was a kid, and I was like, I don't want to watch this. And so when I went and saw it, I got done, and I called her, and I said, look, you can't – my niece is 9. I was like, you can't have her – go see this. And it's not because the movie is rated R to me. I think she should engage the content at some point.
Yep.
But at this point, I know my niece. She's really sensitive. There's some imagery in there that I know would give her nightmares. And so I don't think she should see that. But I live in the city. I just read a book called Christ in City. And it talks about all these different ways to engage the city as a believer. And one of the chapters in the book is called Children in the City. And it's interesting to me, living in the city, the questions that my daughter and my niece have when they're with me. Like, I'll be driving around, and my daughter will ask questions like, why is there graffiti everywhere? And so I have to explain to her, you know, where graffiti comes from, why people might do that. They might be doing that in anger. She sees homeless people. She wants to know how she can help them or why they're homeless. And so she's seeing these things that we protect our children from by generally moving to the suburbs. This is, I hear a lot of stuff from people like, your kid in the city is a terrible place to raise them. But as a parent, it's my job. It behooves me to expose them to certain things in certain contexts so we can talk about them. But then there are certain things that I'm definitely going to keep her away from until she's at a place where I feel like, okay, now she can engage this, and I've raised her to a certain place where I think she can make some decisions on her own. But that wasn't the point of this conversation, obviously, but I wanted to show how it impinges upon upon these things.
Absolutely. There are some other implications with that too, I think. But Scott, go ahead.
I think the question of discernment is one that, you know, we have, in so many ways, American Christians have abdicated the notion of discernment to someone else. Whether it's the MPAA for movie ratings or our pastor or, you know, some other person or group of people that tell us what is and is not acceptable. And, you know, and we go with that and we teach our kids to do the same thing. We say no to our kids and we say, you know, well, because I said so, right? And as a parent, I know it is so much easier. And that there are times when what your kid needs to hear is because I said so. But so much more often what they need is us to explain to them, even if it's in a way that seems too difficult and maybe incomprehensible for them at the time, to begin to introduce them to the ways in which we as mature believers have to process these things and make these determinations in real life. People have not done that in the past, and we have, you know, countless American adults who completely lack the ability to discern these things themselves, not because they can't do it, but because they just haven't been practicing it. They haven't built up that muscle.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I know we're pushing on time here, so do we have any other questions
that yeah,
you want to wrestle with?
Or? I kind of, well, not really wrestle, I feel like we've wrestled with most of the questions I'd want to ask. There's some things I think we could explore more deeply, but there are issues like the MPAA system alone and discernment alone, which really merit their own podcast. One of the things I wanted to potentially leave our viewers with is Calvin, you definitely already touched on this, of R-rated content which you have been exposed to, of that which is valuable, what might you recommend for audiences and why? Of course, with the addendum that this is going to be an R-rated content.
Are you asking me that personally, or are you asking just our listeners?
I mean, personally, yeah, for our listeners. For sort of food for thought, as I go.
Again, I mean,
it seems like... Sorry, Calvin, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, again, if I understand your question correctly, you're asking me to make, what, recommendations on certain content
yes.
that should be engaged?
No, not content. Okay. A movie, a book, an album,
anything.
Oh, okay.
Anything. Well, definitely, I think I've named a few. Schindler's List is at the top of my list because it causes us to remember 12 Years a Slave, which is brand new, just came out this past Friday. Should probably get Best Picture. Also, a movie that people should watch because it causes us to remember movies like Glory causes us to remember. But then there's some movies that are R-rated content that ask some difficult questions and don't give easy answers. Like Million Dollar Baby has to do with assisted suicide. Cider House Rules has to do with abortion. And I remember hating that movie when it first came out. But now as I've engaged the content as I've gotten older and revisited the movie a few times, I think it's a movie that's of value, that asks some questions, even if you don't necessarily agree with the conclusions that the story comes to. So I definitely think that there are, those are recommendations from me. I think other people are going to land in very different places on what content is valuable to them. Passion of the Christ is a movie that I believe is infinitely valuable, but I could only watch it one time. I've never seen it more than once, and I never will again. It's just that intense. What about you, Scott? Anything that any films with R-rated content that you would recommend?
You know, I second your recommendations on the films. I think there are a lot of really quality stories that have been told with great excellence that merit an R rating. And I do think that in most of those cases, I would not want a child who was under 17 to go and see that film mm-hmm. without some sort of, you know, parental input and guidance. I think they need somebody to be with them. And it's not just enough to sit next to them in a theater or next to them on a couch in a living room, but we need people to engage with one another about the things that we're seeing, about the content, and especially kids. And some of those movies, you know, when you take a kid at the right time and you introduce them to some of that stuff, it can teach them remarkable things, but the conversations that you have after that can be infinitely more valuable than having viewed right. the film. So I think that's tremendously helpful. I would recommend the Bible if you're interested in R-rated content. I think...
I love that.
You know, as a
but not Song of Solomon, because whoa.
Well,
whoa.
You know,
that,
as a
I got a confession. I actually, as an unmarried man, I have yet to make it through Song of Solomon. It's just I know what they're talking about. That's kind of hot, but that's really awkward.
Yeah, I agree, and that's the thing I would say. You know, as a former pastor, almost everyone I know has not read the Bible enough. Mm-hmm. However, there are people who don't need to read certain parts of the Bible at certain times. Like everything else, discernment has to be a significant part of the choices that you're making about that. And I think, you know, for all of these things, it's just critical for us to, you know, to consider the question. No matter what it is, any of the stuff that we're engaging with, we have to be considering, is this the right thing? Is this the best thing for me? at this time in these circumstances. I think it changes from person to person, and for every person, it'll change over the course of your life, you know?
Okay. So then I want to talk about that next week. That you've just come up with our topic, unless something huge happens in the culture. Because, and this is the question that I've dealt with, especially having a daughter. If you grew up in children's church like I did, you heard the Bible stories and stuff like that. Like, oh, Noah, it's cool. Noah caught all the animals on the boat, and they were in a big boat. They forgot, like, and God killed everybody else. You know, like we sanitize the stories for children. David and Goliath, you know, he killed Goliath, but then he also cut Goliath's head off, and they had a ticker tape parade down the center of the city. You know, you sanitize these stories. And so I think a question that kind of comes from your commentary there, and then I'll close this all down, is should we sanitize and protect children or even adults from certain parts of Scripture for a time? Is that helpful or hurtful? And I think we could look at history and kind of come to some opinions and ideas on that within the week. But I think that would be a really good discussion to have, because that happens lots of different places, and talk to any children's pastor and they'll tell you, you know, there's reasons why they do that by and large. But I'm not sure I necessarily agree with that. And I say that even having a child. I have a child and I know there's certain things I want to protect her from, but at the same time I'm going, this is God's word. And so I think that should be next week's conversation if you guys are up for it.
I'd be up for it. No, so much of what I wanted to say touched on exactly that, and it just, I didn't feel like it was on topic.
How about you, Scott? Are you feeling up for a conversation on that?
Sure, I think that's great.
Okay, cool. And it gets away from the whole right and wrong thing. Well, maybe it might move into that territory. There's really no getting away from it.
When
right
you're dealing
wrong,
with like, issues of Christ, it's
gonna
be.
I'm trying so hard here, Scott. I'm trying so hard. Such a disappointment, Dad. I'm such a disappointment. But okay, so I'll take the reins from here. We've run out of time, and hopefully, you know, we won't have as many technical difficulties next week with Rachel, and she'll be able to join us again, because we always love having her input. But I think we had a very fruitful conversation. If you have questions about this podcast, email us at thejacobsessions3228@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Jacob_Sessions, and then you can also check out our Facebook page. I haven't been doing much with the Facebook page. I just got to kind of figure out what we're doing there. But facebook.com/thejacobsessions, you'll be able to find us there. So we're going to leave you with a little bit more music from Alex Faith. I don't know how to say it. It's hard to put an S on his last name. Alex Faith. New album, his debut album on Collision Records at last. So we're going to leave you with a little bit more music from that. If you are listening to the podcast, if you're watching, I guess you'll just have to also download the audio to hear that. But thanks so much for tuning in, guys. Thank you so much for your input. David, thank you so much for leading the conversation and then starting off with such a great question.
Yeah, thanks, excellent. David.
KP, all they live that city life in the city, from the city. We all know what that city like. Let's go. East side of my city, got that New York state of mind. BX, I'm on it.